Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. During the last D.C. election cycle, we've seen new faces elected to the D.C. Council. And one of those new faces belongs to Zachary Parker. He represents Ward 5, a seat previously held by Kenyon McDuffie, who now holds a D.C. Council at large seat. Tonight, we're going to get to know Councilmember Parker, as well as talk about Ward 5 and some of the other issues before the D.C. Council. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilmember Zachary Parker, thank you so much for coming in. Nice to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Let me just start with, you know, this whole thing about, you know, one of the new faces going to the council. Was it everything that you expected it to be? I'm sure there was probably a bit of a shock value or surprise value.
Yes, it has been everything I expected and so much more. No one can fully prepare you for everything that the job entails. And in the first week of being in office, Ward 5 experienced a tragedy. And there has been a series of tragic events in the ward that has caused me to kind of shore up in the role pretty immediately. Some have said I've been baptized by fire. So it has been a whirlwind, but we are hitting the ground running and pushing for impact.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to run?
Before running for council, I served as the Ward 5 representative on the D.C. State Board of Education. Some would refer to as the school board. I'm a former seventh grade math teacher. I'm an educator by background. And I saw the council as an opportunity to enact real change in education in the district. And it was an opportunity to build what I call a healthy community and really target the root causes that are systemic in many of the areas that residents are struggling in, from housing to health to education to violence, and believed I had a lot to offer.
Mm. Speaking of what you have to offer, as I said, there are a lot of new faces on the D.C. Council. What makes you particularly unique? What is in your wheelhouse that may not necessarily be the strong suit of the other council members? No shade to them at all, certainly.
Of course not. Of course not.
But what is it that you bring to the table?
I do think it's a strength that I'm an educator. I believe I'm the only classroom teacher or person that was a classroom teacher on the council. I come directly from the State Board of Education, which I believe is that has not happened in quite some time. And I've had an opportunity to really immerse myself in Ward 5 at a time when D.C. and the ward is changing so drastically. And so I believe I'm able to interface with different parts of the community, which is essential, honoring the legacy and those that have long lived here and called D.C. home, at the same time embracing those that are new to our communities and wanting to call Ward 5 home. So I believe having a unique vision and insight, but also the experience of being an educator and the skill sets that come with that, is a different perspective, but also approach to governing.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to the new Ward 5 D.C. Council member, Zachary Parker. If you have a comment or a question for him, give us a call. Lines are open. Of course, we'll take your phone calls up until about 8 o'clock or so. As an educator, how did you feel when the Alabama Congressman Gary Palmer called DC public schools inmate factories when at that congressional hearing a week or so ago?
I thought it was an ignorant comment and indicative of how many unfortunately view our young people. Those are the perceptions that we have to confront when we're trying to put forth legislation to address the root causes that are impacting families and our young people. I can attest to the work and the progress that our schools have made. I also acknowledge there is a lot of work that we still need to do. And I think everyone is clear-eyed about that. But I can assure that DC public schools and our charter schools, none of them are inmate factories.
Mm-hmm. You have submitted, you know, legislation, the School Safety Amendment Act. What do people need to know about that?
A few things. So public safety is top of mind for residents across the district. The same is true in Ward 5. And it is also true for school communities. I've heard repeatedly from Ward 5 school leaders, as well as school leaders and teachers across the district, that they need more support. Coming from the pandemic, now that we are emerging from the pandemic, if you will, there are traumas, there are results, residual results and effects that are being felt in the day-to-day lives of educators. And so the legislation seeks to expand capacity in our schools to address school safety, but also provides funding. And it outlines a few things. One, it requires OSSE, which is our state superintendent's office, to convene stakeholders to create and enhance school safety guidelines to not only spell out what should be required, but also making sure that it speaks to the social, emotional, and behavioral health aspects of our young people. Secondly, it dedicates at least one school safety director position to every school. That is a full-time school safety personnel in every school. In our high schools, there will be two positions, knowing that in our high schools, there are greater challenges. Third, it would specify and delineate how schools should interface with external agencies like MPD, DBH, and the list goes on. And then last but not least, it ensures there is clarity around how our emergency agencies are communicating back with schools and childcare centers in the instance of an emergency. Oftentimes, if there is a shooting and schools go on lockdown, schools are not always clear when it is safe to resume school, and there is not always clarity in the communication pipeline. And so this legislation seeks to do all of those things, namely enhancing school safety at a time when school leaders are uncertain about the future. There is uncertainty around school resource officers in schools. It's worth noting that right now we have about 40 school resource officers in DC public schools. And for those wondering, that's essentially police dedicated to our public schools. The mayor, in the mayor's proposed budget, she's proposing that there is going to be 40, no more than 40 SROs next year. It is yet to be seen what the council is going to do and take action on that. And so that essentially maintains the status quo at a time when school leaders are saying they need more support. So I believe this legislation addresses the needs of our school communities.
We are talking to DC Ward 5 council member Zachary Parker. He is new to the job, just elected last year. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I know you said it is, we're not sure exactly what the council is going to do, but you're on the council.
I am.
So do you support more resource officers or fewer?
Theoretically, no. I do not want more police officers in our schools. I don't think that creates the environment conducive for learning. At the same time, I can acknowledge that school leaders are saying, some of them, they want more SROs in schools. And so that is a tension and a conversation that is ongoing at the council. Outside of that, what I'm trying to paint for you is that we have 40 SROs now. There will be no more than 40 SROs next year. And so we need to think creatively and outside of the status quo to address school communities' needs. And those school safety directors are non-police personnel to expand capacity that will be fully funded outside of school budgets to make sure that schools have full-time people in their buildings focused on safety. Last thing I would just say, many fail to realize the SROs are not in schools all day. They are often split between schools. These school safety directors would be in schools all day and would therefore provide ongoing capacity for the and duration of the school year.
So first of all, you said funded outside of the school budget?
Yes.
So who would pay for them?
It would, well, the the legislation would call for the funding through the general budget. And the reason why I'm calling that is because right now we're at a time when actually today we had a budget oversight hearing where we had over 400 people testifying, many of them talking about the ways in which the mayor's proposed budget slashes school budgets, namely within DCPS. And so we cannot, in good faith, put one more line item on school budgets at a time when they're already struggling. And so this would add capacity while at the same time would be funded outside of school budgets.
What would be the difference between a school safety director and a police officer, aside from what appears to be most obvious, is that they would not be sworn officers?
They would not be sworn officers. They would be in the school buildings all day. They would work directly with the school leadership team and a school safety team. They would have clarity and direction from those school safety guidelines that would come from the state superintendent's office. And they would work in concert with the school community. I hear, and I want to just recognize that many school communities value the work of SROs. This is not to disparage the work that they're doing. It is just to say that these school safety directors would be full time. They would be part of the team. They would be a part of the community and would work in concert with the direction and the vision of the school.
Help me with some more of the specifics. I mean, what would they do? I mean, what would children see? How would we know, yeah, if a high school student is walking through the hallways when, you know, Zachary Parker, math teacher, was walking through, hey, Mr. Parker, I know that he's the math teacher. You know, we know that Miss Jones is the principal. We know that Miss Smith is a vice principal. But now we have this school safety director under your proposed legislation. Who would that Mr. Johnson or Mrs. Zachary, whoever, what would that students see? How would they identify this person the whole day?
They would be part of the school community, so that would look different. And as part of the legislation, as I mentioned, we are calling on the state superintendent's office, OSSE, to come up with guidelines, direction, and vision for this role, as well as enhanced school safety guidelines. And so we have not set all of the parameters. I think it's important through legislation that you set the vision, you set the floor, and we are calling on OSSE to work with other stakeholders across the city, including those at the Student Advocates Office who have advocated for a similar approach, those in our behavioral health agencies, and many more, to come up with a comprehensive approach of how do we keep students safe and whole and ensure that we're protecting and creating safe spaces to learn.
We are talking to D.C. Ward 5 Council Member Zachary Parker. If you have a comment or a question, you can give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Donnie, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Donnie, are you there?
Oh,
yeah, go.
It's my turn.
You go right ahead, real quick.
Zachary, this is not a question, it's a comment. You earned this position. You went door to door like Mary and Barry to get this job, and your first job was non-paid. And I watched you go from Dunbar High School, vetting the kids to see what they're looking for in an education. I watched you help folks deal with the pandemic, and certainly you're going to be a blessing for Ward 5. You know I'm your biggest fan, and HUR. I've been with them for 100 years as a YMCA guy. You couldn't have picked a better media partner to help get your mission met. That's all I got to say. Good job, Zachary Parker.
Thank you, Donnie. I promise I didn't pay him to call in
and
say that.
Right. But and we promise we are not your partner. But
I really appreciate that, Donnie.
Yeah, Donnie, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to the new D.C. Ward 5 Council Member Zachary Parker about all things Ward 5 and other issues that are impacting the District of Columbia. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 319-7810. And as always, we will be taking your phone calls all the way up until just before 8 o'clock. I do want to say that we have Sandra on the line from Virginia. We're going to talk to you. Valerie calling from D.C. You're also next up, so please stay on the line. But we are going to take a break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone, and you can hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the line, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking to the new D.C. Ward 5 council member, Zachary Parker. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Valerie, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Valerie. What's on your mind?
Hello. I have a question for Mr. Parker.
Sure.
So my question is, if you would like to see a little bit less involvement from the SROs, what would the plan be for this new safety director if there's a situation where a student may have a weapon or maybe there's a fight? What will the difference be in how this director will, I guess, interact or intervene, mm-hmm. if there's a situation that could be dangerous? Wouldn't he end up having to call SRO anyway?
Great question. There will inevitably be situations that require police interference. The legislation calls on the state superintendent's office, or OSSE, to delineate how schools should engage with external agencies, including MPD. Right now, what I can tell you is that there isn't clarity around how schools are engaging MPD. Some are calling 911, some are calling other lines and officers, some are trying to deal with matters in-house. And so the hope is that by expanding capacity and providing greater clarity around how one should engage, that we actually improve safety in schools.
Okay. And just one more comment. If you're saying that you're hearing from educators as well that are asking for more support and, more SROs, I guess I'm just kind of wondering why create, if you're hearing directly from them, that they appreciate the relationship that's being built with the SROs?
Another great question. I would say two things. One, the legislation is neutral on SROs. And so whether or not we maintain SROs in our school, I still think the legislation is necessary, namely because what we've heard from school leaders is that the status quo is not working. As I mentioned in the mayor's proposed budget, she is only proposing to fund up to 40 FTEs of SROs. So nothing's going to change at best. We still need the legislation to expand capacity and create clarity and safety in our schools. Secondly, what I would say is, based on the data that I have, the majority of Ward 5 school leaders I've talked to have, quote unquote, mixed feelings about SROs. There are certainly a large number of school leaders that want them. There are some that don't want them at all. And so, as I mentioned, these conversations are ongoing at the council. I have not close the door to the conversations. I'm still talking to my colleagues as well as school leaders. But I hope that provides clarity or just around why this legislation is necessary, regardless of where we land on SROs.
Okay. Valerie, okay. Thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you for your time.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dorothy calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Dorothy. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is that we are really proud of our new councilperson, but we also need some boots on the ground. Therefore, if y'all want things to be going on in the school, y'all got to get with the parents and let the parents know what's going on and get them in those meetings so they know what their child is supposed to be doing instead of having a stranger to that child, and that child don't know nothing about them and they don't know nothing about that child. So get the parents involved. It should be a mandatory, because for 9 times out of 10, there's a school here in D.C. now that got little boys coming to school with knives. Now, I don't know what the principal is doing and what they're doing about it and why they haven't notified the family. But the thing is, our council person, he can't do it all. So parents, we got to get up and start to back him up and find out for my kids what's going on at the school. Kids smart. Kids know what's going on at the school. Okay. So then we'll know how to help him to help the school to protect our children. Our children needs protecting. We got knives and guns coming in elementary schools.
Well, Dorothy, thank you. I want to have the council member try to address your point. Thank you so much.
Well, no, Dorothy, I really appreciate it. Your comments, because what it speaks to is that this will require all of us working together to improve the safety of our communities. I absolutely agree that it takes parents, but it also takes community members that don't have kids, as well as us in the Wilson Building. Recently, I put out my Ward 5 public safety plan. I would encourage neighbors to take a look. In it, it speaks to how we are working to deploy boots on the ground, conduct outreach, coordinate across communities and agencies to improve public safety. I have called on the mayor, and I will continue to call on the mayor to produce a comprehensive citywide public safety plan. And we need to continue to consolidate our public safety apparatus. The last thing I would say is we've talked about the school safety enhancement legislation, but I've also introduced other pieces of legislation, namely the district child tax credit, which is aiming to raise the financial floor for many of our families to address some of the root causes is why I think we're seeing young people out committing some of the crimes. It would essentially provide a tax credit for up to three children for individuals earning up to $120,000 or less, or a married couple earning up to $175,000. We are cutting through the noise, trying to find real tangible solutions that will cut poverty, that will address root causes, and improve safety across the district.
Dorothy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's talk a little bit about the crime issue in the district, specifically as it relates to youth crime. So we know spring break is next week. It was very warm today, going to be warmer tomorrow. That means people are going to be out and about. We already saw, for example, a child shot, a teenager shot a couple of weeks ago at Turkey Thicket Park. What do you believe is the root cause, and is there a secret sauce to addressing this issue as we get into warmer months like spring and, of course, summer?
The root cause of much of what we're seeing is the fact that we have too many guns on our streets. Even though we are seeing some positive trend lines with violent crime ticking downward, although it's still way too high, we are seeing more incidents involving guns. We are at a heightened level in homicides at this point in the year compared to last year. And what I'm really concerned is what you're alluding to. Without a comprehensive citywide plan, we're going to see that number trend upward. While we are still waiting on federal partners to take action on the guns, I think there are steps that we could take locally. One is making sure that we're coordinating better across our public safety agencies, making sure that we have more boots on the ground, making sure that we are engaging neighbors, utilizing police effectively, but more importantly, addressing the root causes of crime. I keep coming back to that because that, in my opinion, is how we're going to stem the tide. We know that we just had a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, and while we are desperate to get on with our lives and get back to quote-unquote normal, there are many traumas and impacts that our young people are experiencing and facing. And if we do not systematically address that, I think we're going to be spinning our wheels. What does that look like? Expanding mental health support and expanding substance abuse support. While homicides are trending upward, and that is a big concern, also is a concern is the fact that we are seeing exponentially more overdose deaths in the district, including in Ward 5. And that is something that we have within our means to address in this year's budget. And that's a choice. And so I'm pushing my colleagues to think boldly around how we're going to invest in public safety because our residents are demanding it, but they also deserve it.
There seems to be a not a delicate, but a difficult balance as it relates to this public safety issue in the district. This was an Award 5 issue. This is a D.C. issue. As we know, last Friday, there was a horrific crime at the Ivy City Hotel.
Yes.
A woman who was visiting from Virginia to attend a concert. And from, you know, all of the reporting and the court documents, this woman, Christy Bautista, did not know her attacker. She attacked in her hotel room, stabbed 30 times. Mm. Those kind of horrific headlines, for lack of a better term, they really kind of do a number on the image of the District of Columbia. Suffice it to say that, and I'm not discounting the impact of the pandemic, but D.C. had a crime problem before COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what needs to really change in the district to really kind of address these, you know, some of these issues?
First, I want to just acknowledge the tragedy of the circumstance that you're talking about. And my heartfelt sympathies goes out to the young woman that was killed unnecessarily. And I make no excuses for
it.
It is horrible. And I don't want
to
opine on that situation because I don't know. And I know the investigation is ongoing. Mm-hmm. What I can say is that we need to look at everything from how we are holding folk accountable, how we are deploying boots on the ground and working in tandem with communities around public safety, how we're enacting legislation thoughtfully, but also how we're addressing the root causes of violence at a time where we're seeing increases in rent, more people potentially being displaced. Next year's proposed budget cuts emergency rental assistance from $40 million to $8 million. At a time when we are seeing homelessness ticking upward, we see in next year's proposed budget that there isn't an increase or an expense for more vouchers. We see slashes to MPD. We see slashes to DBH, and that's the Department of Behavioral Health. And the list goes on. And so what I'm getting at is not to excuse it or condone it, but if we do not address the problems on the front end, we will continue to be trying to chase our tail and clean up matters once things are out of whack. And what I believe is happening, especially with our young people, is that we have not addressed the problem head on enough. That's it. There has been a lot of talk around not holding juveniles accountable. And I just want to address the elephant in the room. We do have a new attorney general. I have full confidence that the attorney general is doing everything he can and the agency is doing everything it can to prosecute cases that need to be prosecuted and provide paths for rehabilitation when necessary. That's it. We have no control over the courts. And in the case of the Ivy City murder and many others, there are questions around decisions made by the courts. That is not to point fingers or shame and blame, but it is to say that we have within our control only a certain set of things, but we have to work together if we're going to see public safety. And I don't think we're working together nearly enough. And when I talk about coordination, that's the coordination that I think we need to see. So just last week, I met with several of our judges to just better understand the work that they're facing, the challenges that they're seeing, what they need from us on the council, because we need greater coordination. And I'm hoping we can see that at a citywide level.
The police chief, Robert Conte, says the number of police officers is woefully inadequate.
Yes.
Right now. And, you know, as you know, there are some factions in the greater community that say more police isn't the issue. And then you have some other people who will say more police isn't the issue until your house gets robbed. And, you know, and so, you know, how do you address, you know, that issue?
Yes.
Of, you know, more police, there are community activists who say that a lot of the police officers in the District of Columbia are not from here. They're from other areas. They don't understand the community. And we don't have to speak about the entire city. We can speak about Ward 5, which is one of the most diverse wards.
It's one of the most diverse wards. And I often say it's a microcosm of D.C.
Yeah.
What I think we need to deal with the facts. D.C. has more officers per capita than any other place in the world. And we are investing more than $500 million in policing. And so what Chief Conte has also made clear is that the D.C. Council has not defunded the police, because there has been a suggestion that we are not giving them the funds and resources that they need. That is actually just not factual. What we know now, and it Chief Conte made this clear in last week's oversight budget oversight hearing, is that MPD is losing anywhere from 30 to 35 officers a month. There is an attrition problem because many are retiring. They're choosing to go to other jurisdictions or whatever the case may be. Some are facing discipline matters. And the most optimistic view the chief put forward was that we would hire 20 officers a month. So if you're doing the math, we are losing more officers than we are hiring. That is the reality. Even still, we have more officers per capita, thinking more expansively than just MPD, than any other jurisdiction. And so given our reality and our attrition problem, we are forced to think innovatively and more expansively than just police. And the chief agreed with that and said as much. That is, again, why I'm doubling down and calling on the mayor to put forth a comprehensive public safety strategy and plan, and to work with us on the council to advance that plan. Because if we are waiting on police to simply come and save the day, I think we're going to be waiting for a very long time.
I want to talk about some of the other issues. You are on, you know, committees dealing with a lot of things, including transportation.
Yes.
Let's talk about bike lanes.
Oh, you got all the hot button topics.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, you know, that has been a long standing issue. And you have people who commute by bike. You have people who commute by car.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm going to be completely, you know, transparent, and I'm not a D.C. resident. I live in Baltimore, but we have them there too.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm also a bike rider.
Okay.
But and I know that, you know, the lanes that we have seen, we're supposed to share the road. But what is your opinion of the growth of bike lanes, and do you support more? What is the compromise for that?
I think we need to be thoughtful in how we implement and expand bike lanes. But I have been very clear that we need to prioritize safety. And if you look at the design of this city, wards 5, 7, and 8, the blackest parts of the city, we lead in traffic fatalities. And traffic.
Why is that? Why do you think that is?
It's because of road infrastructure. It's because of speeding cars. It's because of people from Baltimore that are in our streets that are driving recklessly.
And Alexandria. Yeah. And Fairfax.
I say that in jest.
Tongue
in
cheek.
In all seriousness, uh-huh. It's tragic that we are the ones facing the greatest impact of the faulty infrastructure in the city. So I just want to be very clear. It's not a matter of, are you for bike lanes or not? I'm for safety. And what we know is that people are going to ride their bikes. People are going to take other modes of transportation. And I think people should be safe in being able to do that. I support the proposed plans to expand routes, but doing so in a thoughtful way. And the last thing I would just say, I often find that the bike lane debate is really a proxy debate for the broader conversation and way around the ways in which D.C. is changing and has changed.
You mean gentrification?
Gentrification, okay. The ways in which communities don't look the way they used to, and the ways in which repeatedly folk feel as though change is happening to them versus with them. And
so what do you think?
We should have that conversation. And stop vilifying people that simply want to get from point A to point B safely. And I would just ask anybody, have you ever taken a bike up Georgian Avenue?
No,
I can assure you, it is the most terrifying experience. As it is if you ride on New York Avenue, as it is if you ride on Florida Avenue, as it is if you ride in many of our streets. And so, I don't think it's healthy or productive for us to vilify people just simply wanting to get from one place to the other safely. But we should have the deeper, meaningful, more thoughtful conversation around what does it mean for D.C. to change? And what does it mean for folk to have a seat at the table and having a say in that change? And that is what I'm trying to do as the next or as the current Ward 5 council member.
There were a lot of headlines, a month or so ago, when the proposal for free bus service was laid on the table. But as you know, the mayor has talked about, the coming deficit. Is that DOA?
It is not DOA. We are in discussion at the council around how we can make this happen. I would also just point out two things. Free bus service would benefit every district resident, and we would treat it as a common good like we do our libraries. We don't even think about schools and libraries as something we should pay for. And I think it's productive that we think about transit in a similar way. Not to mention, it would deeply benefit folk in Ward 5, 7, and 8, low-income neighbors, and people that are most cut off from transportation in the city. That said, many of us on the council would argue that it was legally passed and mandated how it would be funded. And through maneuvering, let's say, between the mayor's budget and the CFO, somehow it was struck down. Mm-hmm. I join my colleagues in opposing that and have real concerns that our CFO seems to be taking advantage of this independent status that the office is supposed to have. And it seems as though he is working more closely to the desires of the mayor that I think residents would like to see.
So if it's not DOA, but if it's still limping along, is there middle ground? Because it's a big proposal
a huge proposal for a big city. And in order to make it happen, the council needs to find the money in the budget. The mayor did not include it in her budget. And so the challenge is now we need to cut something in order to make way for that. That is the work and the discussion that I'm sure we'll have at the committee and on the council. I just want to underscore that this is not an isolated incident. There was also legislation that mandated that D.C. public schools needed to hold school budgets flat, and the mayor and the chancellor of D.C. public schools did not honor that. There were a number of ways in which it seems as though the executive decided that they either were not going to honor the letter of the law or they were going to take every chance they could to undermine it. And I think that's a concern. Last thing I would just say, the current fight this week is with the impending rent increases on rent control properties across the district. Some 90,000 rent control properties could face up to an 8.9% increase in their rent come May 1st. That is a concern for a number of residents in those properties that are probably already struggling to make ends meet. A nearly 10% increase on the rent could make the difference of someone being able to stay in the district or being displaced. There was two emergency legislation proposals put forward, one by me as well as my colleague Robert White, and they were both deemed to have a fiscal impact by DHCD. Now I'm way in the weeds, but at a high level, all this is to say emergency legislation cannot have a fiscal impact or it cannot cost anything. And DHCD, while they have yet to tell us how much it would cost, and many suspect it could be as little as $30,000 to absorb the paperwork and the implementation of a change to cap the increase on rents at rent control properties, They simply said, and it would have a cost, and they aren't willing to work with us. So what is the consequence of that? If the mayor does not work with the council come May 1st,